the CougarFan.com Rise and Shop podcast, episode 253. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. On this episode, Jerem Jordan of BYU TV joins the show to help preview men's basketball and set proper expectations for this young team. Matt and I then talk Kyle Van Noy to the Patriots, the World Series, head-scratching coaching decisions against Boise State, and then we preview men's basketball. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shop podcast. Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Follow us and like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/Rise and Shout. And listen to our interview with Jerem right now. Welcoming back to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shop podcast from BYU TV, it's Jerem Jordan. What's going on, Jerem?
Hey, what's up, Adam? How we doing?
Fantastic. I mean, it's a bye week, which just means we get to catch our breath, right?
We do get to catch our breath. Basketball.
Yeah, you know what? I'm really glad that the Big 12 didn't do their lame "we're not going to expand" thing during BYU's bye week.
Yeah, last week was like this super long week for some reason, and I like took an early afternoon off on Friday and had Saturday off. And I still felt like it was super long, and I'd forgotten, oh, because of the Big 12 and because of the Boise State game, which ended at, like, midnight. So, yeah, it's been an eventful couple of months here since August, July 19th to you could almost call it the Big 12 expansion era, right?
Yeah.
Or lack thereof. July 19th to last Tuesday, and then subsequently Thursday, and now the worst competitively timed bye week for BYU possible is after a one-point loss to a pseudo-rival Boise State.
Yeah. It's not a great... We could have used that bye week the week before playing Boise, but what are you going to do? So shifting gears here, I am assuming, though I don't know this for certain, so I'm putting you on the spot here, but I'm assuming you'll be calling the women's volleyball match on Friday night?
That's actually Spencer, but it is a big one. It's 5th-ranked San Diego and 16th-ranked BYU.
You do the men's. He does the women's, right?
Oh, yeah. I do sub in if, like, he's out of town or whatever. Like, next week I'm calling the women's basketball exhibition on Friday night. So.
Oh, cool.
But I did call the women's game for three seasons from 08 to 11.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll start with volleyball. Is this the biggest match for them of the year?
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
They got number five, San Diego.
They're back a couple of games, but it could turn the momentum of the end of the season for them. And they have a couple of weeks left, but this is a good BYU team, albeit pretty young on the pins, meaning the outside hitter and opposite position. Very experienced in the middle blocking position, talented at libero with, you know, a freshman Mary Lake. So this is a good team. Heather Olmstead, I think, has done a pretty good job with this group. I thought they'd take a real step back after losing a first team All-American in Alexa Gray. But, really big match for them Friday night against San Diego, discovered by the Germans.
Yes. I believe it was discovered by the Germans. I don't know what San Diego means, but we won't go there. I think it means St. Diego. Agree to disagree.
When in Rome.
I don't think he knows what that means. So let's switch to football before we'll finish up with basketball, because this is our basketball preview show that you're co-starring in. But let's with football. Here's the question. I'm getting this from listeners of the podcast, and Matt and I are going to talk about it later. But I'd love your perspective. Is this football team exceeding, meeting, or falling short of preseason expectations?
Preseason. Meeting. I think before the season we thought, like, okay, 4-4 is probably where BYU is going to end up. Now, if we're talking adjusted expectations, which is, I argued strongly today on BYU Sports Nation that your expectations should change. You see how BYU plays, you see how opponents play, you see game situations like turnover margin and effectiveness offensively or whatever, you see injuries, weather, things, your expectations should change. Because you don't know anything. And then you watch games and you know things, right? So, like, if I had told you before the season that BYU would play 6 games decided by 3 or less and 7 decided by 7 or less, you would hope that BYU would go 3-3 and then 4-3 in those situations.
Yes.
BYU went 2-4 in the 6-game side by 3 list. That is the difference between a 5-3 and a 4-4 record. So 4-4, meeting expectations, first year at coaching staff and all of this, awesome. But then preseason Taysom Hill has not been the Taysom Hill that has played out, right? And the preseason Michigan State and UCLA and Arizona and Mississippi State and Toledo, I mean, a lot of these games, like three of the four teams that BYU's beaten, they're just bad. They're 2-5. Arizona, Mississippi State, Michigan State, right?
Oh, yeah.
Those were wins BYU should get. Then you look at the losses. Three of the four ranked teams now in a combined 20-1. 20-1. West Virginia, Utah, Boise State. Those teams are better, I think, than we thought they'd be. Yet BYU lost by 1-3-1 to those teams. So it's been an interesting season. Exciting, compelling, heartbreaking, emotional, amazing. It's been wild.
It's been crazy. If you had told me at the beginning of the year that we would blow out Michigan State and be 4-4, I wouldn't have believed you. I would have thought you're making it up. That was not
Toledo
possible.
Toledo would be a 2-point game at home, and we'd blow out. BYU would blow out Michigan State by 17.
Yeah, and you feel good about the 2-point win against Toledo because they're a pretty good team.
That might be BYU's best win.
Yeah,
because the other three wins are 2-5.
Yeah, the other three wins are quite frankly terrible. You know, Arizona, who I thought was going to be decent, has obviously not proven to be decent. But you know, I'm with you. Preseason expectations meeting in season expectations, not the same. Well, speaking of expectations, what do you think, shifting to basketball, what are fair expectations for this basketball team? Obviously, the hype is going to be high. You've got the Lone Peak boys together. You've got a deeper group of big men than you've had maybe in the last few seasons. But on the other side, you've got a lot of inexperience and possibly the most experienced player on the team in Kyle Davis. I honestly don't know how big of a role he's going to have once we hit midseason. So you tell me, Jerem, what are realistic expectations for this men's basketball team?
Compete for second in the league, be on the bubble. To me, that's the expectation. Because this team is so young. You have two seniors. One is Kyle Davis. One is LJ Rose, who hasn't played a second year and has a bum ankle and has had a broken foot issue in the last two seasons. So anything he does is a bonus to me because we just don't know what we're going to get. Grad transfer, we'll just see what kind of veteran leadership and life he can inject into this team. So then you have a couple juniors. This, 9 of the 14 players on the roster are underclassmen. Granted, they're really talented. I think Elijah Bryant's a baller. I think TJ Haas, albeit 170 pounds, is going to be a good player, but it might take a little bit of time just to transition in. We saw that with Nick Emery last year. This is Nick Emery's team. He's going to lead the team in scoring. He's going to be a major factor. Eric Mika is going to come in. I think that he's going to be a significant contributor. I think he's going to be fantastic. He'll be on the NBA draft board, second round kind of guy after this season. He'll be a draft pick down the road. It'll take some time for this team to gel, in my opinion. I think that it will take until February until we really see what they are, because the league is good. By the league, I mean Gonzaga and St. Mary's. The rest of the league probably stinks. And Spencer and I went through the entire schedule, and this is our prediction today after the show. We think 24-7 in the regular season is probably where we think they'll land. The non-conference schedule is not that brutal. In conference, I'm predicting that BYU is going to only have one non-St. Mary's Gonzaga loss. And then you have your 24-7, 14-4 in league, and then if you can tack on a win or two in Vegas, you're probably in. I think 25 is probably the magic number to get into the NCAA tournament.
Okay. All right. So those are the expectations on a team level. So let's talk about some individual expectations. You're saying this is Emery's team. He's going to be the main scorer. Who's next? Who do you think? I think most people would agree with you on Emery. I mean, is it Mika? Is it Hawes? I mean, who Who's the second guy, the second go-to guy when Emery's having an off night?
I think it's Elijah Bryant. I think he'll surprise some people. I think Elijah Bryant's ready to go as soon as he's healthy. I mean, as a player. I think TJ Haas is going to be a very good player for BYU. I just think it's going to take a little bit to get used to D1, to get used to... The dude's 170 pounds. Like, he's just really light right now. I have some questions about, you know him. I think he's really talented. I just need to see a little more. We'll see how good Yoli Childs is and how quickly he can gel in that way. And we'll see what Peyton Dasher can do. Which of these guards, these young guards, will provide anything off the bench and how quickly, right? Bayo, Leifson, and so on. There's a lot of unproven dudes, but I like the talent that BYU has. BYU fans, I think, will think that this is the year. This is not the year. By that, I mean where anything is possible. Next year and the year after that are the years. This year is the year to get these guys to gel together, to figure it out. And I think by February, we're going to see what these guys are really made of. And then next year, now we're talking about a team from BYU that could finally, potentially, get ranked and be a single-digit seed and make some noise in the tourney. Maybe they do it at the end of this year, because we're talking about one or two games here. Like, if BYU wins two games in the NCAA tournament, oh my goodness, it's the rapture, right?
Yeah.
Exploded. We're talking about two games. And what was the key for that 2011 team to get to Sweet 16? To be a three seed. That was
right,
the key, because
right.
They played a 14 and then the 11, and we acted like, you know, the world was ending. It was great, you know? So I think this team's really good. I do think it's probably going to take a few months for this team to get it together.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's definitely going to be some growing pains. That is for sure. So let's talk about, you didn't specifically call it Mika. What do you expect from him? You're off a mission. He was obviously quite good as a freshman. Is this something where we expect him to hit a wall at some point, as a lot of RMs do in their first season back? Or do you think, because of the timing of when he came home and just the physicality that he brings, that maybe we won't see that this year?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do think he'll be ready to rock. He got home, like you said, early April. So he's had six full months. TJ Haas, six months, right? To get ready. Peyton Dasher, 5 months to get ready for this season. And so I think something Dave Rose said today is interesting about the team just in general. But to answer your question, I do think Eric Meek will be really good. I think if you think about what Kyle Davis did last year, I think that if Eric Meek could replicate that, that'd be good, which is basically like 12-7. And then having more of those kind of guys capable, that helps. Dave Rose today told the media that no roles on this team have really been carved out, which is a little surprising to me. I thought that they'd at least have an idea of those, but you have to play games and you have to play against other opponents to really know, is Colby Leifson, is he Raul Delgado or is he Zach Selyus? You know, you have to play games to figure it out. It took Zach a little bit to get into the group. It took Nick Emery until February, to where we're like, oh, there's the dude from Lone Peak.
Right, right.
Dave Rose said that Nick Emery's had a fantastic couple of weeks here. He's a leader. Dave McCann in March during the NIT run said, a month ago, this became Nick Emery's team, and I thought, what? Chase Fisher, Kyle Elmsford? I thought, oh, my goodness, he's right. And Nick Emery is an alpha male, and he's one of the returning guys. And I think that last season, with the senior backcourt, those guys were the leaders and the best, but it was a little oil and water at times to try and figure out how to mesh with Nick Emery and shot selection and rotations and minutes. And I think with this group, there's some natural chemistry built in already. Elijah Bryant redshirted last year. TJ Haas and it already just injects chemistry in with those other Lone Peak guys. And so it's integrating a Yoli Childs and a Peyton Dasher and these other freshman guards. So I do think it'll take some time, but I love the talent on the team. BYU's never had six top 100 guys out of high school like this.
No, they have not.
See what they can do. And how quick, I mean, ESPN didn't have the top 100 rankings when you had Chulson and Chapman and Hawes and, like, those late 80s teams. If it was now, maybe those teams have that kind of talent. Hard to know, but this is an exciting time for BYU hoops, no doubt.
So you mentioned this, and I'll get you out on this last question. So you mentioned next year and the next year are the years. What's the ceiling for this group? I mean, are we talking Elite Eight, Final Four ceiling, or are you thinking, well, hey, let's not get ahead of ourselves. BYU's never done this. We're just hoping they can get to the Sweet 16 again.
Yeah, and every year is individual, right? Because you don't build off each year per se in the tourney, because it's all about matchups that year, you know? Like Gonzaga last year had like six dudes at the end of the rotation. They played like one guy off the bench. They had a couple of like 5'9" guys whipping towels around, and that was your bench. They had Wilcher and Sabonis and McClellan, and they just had leadership. They figured it out at the end of the year, and they won two games and should have won the third and even maybe the fourth to get to the Final Four. So I do think that if BYU can get some depth, that helps you should you get injured or should you struggle in life. Then you've got a shot, and because BYU has this group of sophomores and freshmen that will gel together, I don't even think that they might not even win the league the next couple of years. We'll see. Gonzaga has reloaded, and they are good.
Yes, they
have. I don't know that would define your season. I think that if BYU can win two games in the tournament at some point in the next 3 years, then we'll be good with this. And that's a question that I need to figure out myself and with the fans, is what you just asked. Like, what's the expectation for this group? Like, if they don't make a single Sweet 16, is everyone ticked? Like, is it a failure for this group? Because I think some BYU fans think it's Final Four or bust, and that is a dangerous road to plow through.
Yeah, it sure is.
That's a really high ceiling. It's just really high.
Yeah, that's the type of expectation you have when you have like five future NBA guys on your team, right? Like Louisville or
BYU
somebody.
Has one on its roster, and it's Mika. You know what I mean? Like Nick Emery, he's not playing in the NBA. I'm sorry.
Whoa, stop it. Stop it. Stop it, Jaren.
Kyle Collinsworth,
he just got cupped by the Mavs, right? I mean, this is...
Which stinks. Like, that he's one of our better pro prospects physically in a while.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's... like you said, I don't know what the expectation is, but I agree with you. There are going to be some fans where it's probably unrealistically high. Well, Jerem, we appreciate you coming on. As always, I lied. We'll get you out on one last question. If you had today, pick only one movie to see the rest of the year, and I'm not going to do Rogue One because that's too easy. Would you pick...
Oh, come on!
That's a softball. That's a softball. So I'll give you a couple of choices. Would you rather see...
I know it.
Would you already know it? Okay, then say it. I don't have to give you choices.
Doctor Strange.
All right, I thought that was going to be it. I didn't know if...
Especially because some reviews have come out already. And they've been well-reviewed.
Yes, it looks fantastic. So we'll have to have you on again...
Next week!
That's right. It comes out next week. We'll have to have you on again when after that movie's out, and then get your thoughts and maybe help us preview Rogue One, because I'm pretty excited about that one too. So,
oh yeah, totally pumped. Are you more excited about Rogue One or the Men's Basketball?
As the podcast host, I am more excited about Men's Basketball. As Adam, I'm more excited about Rogue One. But you know, Men's Basketball lasts for months. A Rogue One, I'll only see it three or four times in the theater. I mean, it's not as many hours.
That lasts a lifetime.
Yeah, that lasts a lifetime. That's right. Well, Jerem, thanks for coming on. We'll encourage everybody to, of course, check you out daily on BYU Sports Nation, on BYU TV and BYU Radio, and we'll have you on again soon.
Basketball rebellions are built on hope, Adam.
That's right. CougarFan.com, Rise and Shout Podcast. Matt, what's up, dude?
What is up?
You excited for the new Harry Potter movie? I know you love Harry Potter, right?
We've covered this, haven't we? Haven't we talked about this?
Yeah, how much you love Harry Potter.
I've never seen a Harry Potter movie or read a Harry Potter book.
Have you seen any of the commercials for Harry Potter movies?
There's a new one coming out?
There is.
Is this the one about the other guy who's a wizard in New York or something?
The other guy? That's nice. Yes, it's a prequel of sorts.
Okay, so it's a prequel, not a postquel?
It is not a postquel. Not that I don't believe there's any time travel involved.
So is it like, is Harry Potter like Hunger Games? Like, I just don't know much about it.
Really? Is Harry Potter like Hunger Games?
It's like Divergent. It's like one of those.
Oh, stop it, Divergent. That's not even a thing.
Oh, there he goes.
How's Aquatober going, brother?
Yeah, Aquatober is lame.
Aquatober tastes delicious. There's a lot of aqua in this Dr. Pepper made with real sugar.
Probably the first ingredient listed. That's what I told the nutritionist who was concerned about my Diet Mountain Dew intake.
Carbonated water, number one.
My Diet Mountain Dew is already empty. Like, before we even started recording, my drink was gone. I didn't even know what to do with
it. Seems like you lack a little bit of self-control, Matt.
No.
Me, on the other hand, I've got tons of it. Obviously.
I decided to drink that dew.
So it was good. Yeah, you're showing self-control.
There you go.
So, Matt, we've got a couple of tweet bag questions to start off the show.
Tweet bag.
First, on Facebook from Andre Hutchins, he asks and says, I don't have the strength to ask any more questions. I'll use this bye week to get healthy and then come back 110%. Also, I went to the Boise State game. Bronco fans are not all that bad. He said he sat in the Boise State section and all the fans around him were cool, kept to themselves mostly, but cool still. We'll get to the game here in a second, Matt. Are you grateful to have a bye week?
Yeah, I think it's good for my cardiac health.
Yes, I'd say it is. And also, I'm looking forward to the part of the schedule where I'm not staying up till 2 a.m.
That's going to be nice.
Because I was on the East Coast for that Boise State game and had an early morning meeting, and let's just say I was not incredibly sharp on Friday. Was not my sharpest time. Let's move on to another tweet bag question from Joel Everett. That's at Jeverett11 on Twitter. He says, "Who is your pick for the World Series? I know all your listeners are dying to hear your thoughts on this." Matt, I'm glad Joel asked this question because it's baseball World Series time. We're actually recording during game one of the World Series.
I've got it on a television that I can see from here right now.
I also do. Breaking news, the team from Cleveland is beating the team from Chicago 3-0 into the seventh inning. So, Kluber had 8 Ks in the first 3 innings. He's being dominant. Matt, obviously, we've got it's a little unfair because Game 1 is somewhat in the books. Who do you have winning the World Series?
Well, with the advantage of seeing what Game 1 looks like, I'm taking the Cubs!
Cubs in six. I want the Cubs to win. But you know what? I'm okay with either of these teams winning. They both end decades-long droughts.
Yeah, I guess that's cool, whatever.
You know, and then as a Red Sox fan, you get to the team that beat us in the playoffs won the World Series. Though, actually, I think that's lame. I don't actually ever feel that way, you know? But, yeah, it's interesting. So, Cubs in six, we'll see, Matt. I don't think I'll probably miss another game after this one. I do enjoy some baseball, even if our fans don't enjoy baseball.
Well, sometimes we'll even make adjustments for something like this, you know, and not record during major sporting events. But
if it had been game like game 6 or 7, we would not be recording right now.
Or if this involved the Red Sox or the Nationals, we'd probably not be recording.
We would also have probably recorded last night. Well, that Dr. Pepper tastes good tonight. All right. So, Matt,
yeah, I'm sure.
Let's hop into the CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news!
Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Matt, I have to address something here because you just did one of our awesome sound effects. My wife has suddenly started listening to podcasts. Not our podcasts, but other podcasts.
Of course not our podcast. Your wife has taste.
Yeah, exactly. She has said we need more like professional sounding effects and stuff. What do you think?
She clearly hasn't listened to the show. What's unprofessional about what I just did?
What you just did is awesome. I mean, and the best thing, it's a live performance every time. We don't do a recording of it that I just insert into the show.
That would be lame. And we're it's full disclosure here, and we've never hidden from this fact. We are amateurs.
amateurs may be too soft of a word. but yes, 250. How many episodes? Is this 253?
I don't know. I've lost count.
I've lost count too. I can't count tonight. So Matt, back to Cougars in the news. Let's start off with women's soccer. They beat San Diego on the road this weekend. Gave up a goal, which is kind of interesting. They have not given up more than one goal in a game in like 2.5 months. Proved to 13-2-1, 4-1-1 in the conference. They've got St. Mary's and Pacific on the road. Both of those teams are terrible. So next week we'll be talking about the 15-2-1 Cougars. Number 16 volleyball beat Pepperdine in the Smithfield House this past week and swept them, and then had a close match against Loyola Marymount. But the big news, Matt, is on BYU TV on Friday they will be hosting number 5 in the land, San Diego.
Oh boy!
So that'll be probably the biggest match of the year for the Cougars there, Matt. Now it's time for Cougars in the Pros with the first pick in the NFL draft.
Sit down, Goodell.
The New York Jets select the MCL of Geno Smith.
Oh, not a strong pick.
Not a strong pick.
Not a strong pick.
Hey, they at least have
Geno Glass Jaw Smith.
At least they have a disgruntled quarterback they just handed tens of millions of dollars to come in this weekend, right?
Hello.
Nothing could go wrong there. Matt, in the Detroit...
what could possibly go wrong? What
could possibly go wrong with this disgruntled bearded quarterback?
This team doesn't believe in me. I think it's your performance.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's your terribleness.
Results-based industry. You know what? Is Ryan Fitzpatrick a better quarterback than me? Yes.
Yes. Yeah, that was never in doubt. Is he a good enough quarterback to start on in a playoff caliber NFL team? I think we have now years of data that would say that he's not, but I'm really glad the Jets gave him all that money because that means they can't spend it on starters. Matt, for the Detroit Lions, Ziggy Ansah, second week back in the lineup, took 53 snaps, which I think was about 70% or so of the defensive snaps, still playing his way back into shape. He's made 3 tackles in the last 2 weeks. But no sacks since he returned. Kyle Van Noy played on just 21% of the defensive snaps, played on a bunch of special teams, had no tackles. But that's not the news about Kyle Van Noy, Matt.
Oh, no, it's not. No,
Kyle
it's
Van
not.
Noy has been traded to our New England Patriots.
Oh, I know I just checked this 5 minutes ago, but I'm going to go check again and see if I can get a Van Noy jersey yet.
Yeah.
They've got a...
We're hours after the trade, Matt. I don't think you're going to get a jersey. So on Twitter,
I checked just before we started recording; it wasn't available yet. But you know, it doesn't hurt to check again. They've got to assign him a number at some point.
At some point, he will have a number, and you and I will own a jersey. I'll get to that in a minute. Todd and D on Twitter. That's at Todd and D. That's our good friend Todd, who switches between how he asks questions. He's ambidextrous when asking. Tweet bag questions.
He's ambidextrous. I'm not sure that's the term.
It is. Zero to Detmer level of excitement that KVN is getting traded to the Patriots. Matt, zero to Detmer. How excited are you for this?
If you haven't picked up on this already, the answer is clearly Detmer.
No, for me, it's like Robbie Bosco. I mean,
are you serious?
Well, if he had been drafted by them 40th overall, I would be Detmer level excited. But, you know, I am hopeful that the Patriots, because if anybody can get him started, I mean, I read one article today. I have already read six articles on this trade of a backup linebacker.
I've probably read all of the same six articles.
So they were talking about, you know, could you see him in a Mike Vrabel type of role? And I absolutely could. He's got.
And I think that the Patriots believe that that's his upside if he can get there.
Well, they gave up a sixth round draft pick for him, Matt, and got a seventh round in return. So, quite frankly, I feel like obviously the Lions did not think Vannoy had much value, right?
Right.
And I think the Pats bought low, and that's what the Patriots do, and that's why they're better than the Lions. So we'll see how that one works out. Our brother, Don, that on Twitter is at DP Mangum, says, is one of you getting a Kyle Van Noy jersey for his birthday? When is his birthday?
Listen, I'm going to be honest with you. I've got everybody's birthdays pretty much narrowed down to the month.
That's good. That's good. Good for you. Good for you. I actually know when his birthday is because I got married like the day before his birthday or the day after.
Oh, man, that was nice.
That was nice. I scheduled it. Well, I didn't put it on his birthday. That would have just been rude.
That's what I'm saying. That was very nice of you.
Yeah, I'm a nice person. Dennis Pitta is I've got the wrong thing in here. He had, I think, 5 catches on Sunday.
Shocker.
Lasique, 20 snaps, no carries. The other big NFL news was Daniel Sorensen, Matt. He played on 47 snaps, 18 on defense, but he had a pick 6.
First house call, so, Dr. Sorensen.
Obviously,
paging
a nice
Dr.
week.
Sorensen.
Nice week for Daniel Sorensen, and John Denny was long snapping as usual. For the NBA version of this, not shocking, Matt, Kyle Collinsworth was cut by the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah, it was unfortunate.
Yep, kind of saw that coming, unfortunately, but what are you going to do? Matt, let's talk some football. You ready to relive Boise State?
Oh, yes.
Would you like me also to kick you in the crotch? Would that also be something we should do on this podcast?
Oh, my gosh.
So, that being said,
I can't take these anymore.
Actually,
this is insane.
I feel good about this loss. Not, like, good, but, like...
Oh, here we go.
But here's the thing. Boise State's a really good team, and we had absolutely no business being in that game.
We had no business losing that game. How many times did we get how many turnovers did we get?
5.
You don't lose. You don't get 5 turnovers and lose. That's insane.
No, 4 turnovers and a blocked field goal.
That's insane.
What the total is. Yeah, you know, I agree. You shouldn't lose if you do that. On the other side, like, Boise State's a better team, right?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I predicted a Boise State win.
Yeah, I did not. So what do I know? So on Facebook, Gary Payne asked this question, Matt. So we got to do it. We got to do it. Okay. Part of me doesn't want to talk about this, but I feel like we have to talk about it. Okay. So remember last week, this is Gary talking. When I talked about the strength of our coaching, I do remember that, Gary.
You don't sound like Gary at all.
I don't sound like Gary at all. Fake punt. Then we don't go for it on 4th and 5 or 6 with like 6 minutes left and the D playing better. Thoughts? Wow, Matt. When I saw that fake punt, I thought something had gone wrong. And by
that's what I assumed.
Johnny Linehan had gone insane. That's, you know. And then a couple of people on Twitter were trying to say, like, well, that was something that, you know, he called on his own. And then when the replay, it was like, he clearly did not call it. This was a designed play.
Yeah, it was just before the ball was snapped. Like, they came out there with the intention of running the fake.
Yes, yes. Matt, on a scale of 0 to super stupid, how bad is that call?
I'm going to go with...
super stupid?
It's super stupid. I'm sorry.
4th and 19 in your own end zone?
Yeah, there's a reason nobody ever does that.
Yes. 4th and 19 in your own end zone. Now, I get it. You've got a rugby guy running, okay? And they, you know, Satake said in multiple interviews, because he was asked this question a lot at halftime and then after the game.
Very surprising that he was asked multiple times about this.
Very surprising. And he said that they had seen something on tape that made them think that Boise State was vulnerable to the play they were going to call. The problem is, I don't have any problems with fake punts. I love fake punts. But you dial that up near the 50, not at inside your own 5.
Yeah, the risk reward and the bad consequences in on
and
where you
yards.
Are on the field right there are way too high.
Johnny Linehan has to run for 20 yards to make it work.
Yeah, well, no, it's 4th and 19, right?
Yeah.
And he's already standing in the end zone.
Oh, you're right. So he's
got to
run
for
like yards.
30 yards.
Yeah, 30 yards. Yeah, you know, that's not Paul Asike back there.
I mean, how far back is the return man?
40 yards out, so probably standing at the 45.
All right, so the return man is closer to the first down marker. Than Johnny Linehan is. Just think about this for a minute. So Linehan, not only does he need to outrun the defense, but he's got to beat the return man to the down marker.
Yes.
I mean, there's all sorts of wrong on the call. I'm with you. I like the
aggressiveness.
I like how aggressive the coaching staff is being. I like their willingness to try new things. But when you live by that sword, you're gonna die by that sword.
Yeah.
You know, with the decision to go for two in the Utah game and these, and when it doesn't go well, and but of course this, I can defend the decision to go for two in the Utah game. I don't agree with it, but I totally get it. Right. I understand the philosophy behind it. I'm just not in that same camp, but I can respect that.
Yeah.
This 4th and 19 from your own end zone fake punt business. I can't really wrap my head around it.
Well, with the down and distance, here's the other decision, Matt. With the down and distance on that last field goal attempt, don't you have to try to get closer one more play before the block? Obviously, nothing. You've got to take the field goal. I mean, you can't take the field goal then after the block because you're too far away. But you've got a kicker that is not a long leg guy. You've got to get closer. You got to take. Try to get something in the sideline and get another 10 yards and give.
Yeah, because you didn't have to kick that there. You didn't have to.
No, you had
the option not to do something.
You could do it. But I want to bring something else up, and then we'll do it through a tweet bag. This is from Jim Hale on Twitter. That's at JimSH62. He says, I'm not for changing QBs, so he is not calling for replacing Taysom with Tanner. But there are obvious situations to insert Tanner to pass long. Why no reps? Matt, this is my biggest problem right now with the coaching staff. When we need a Hail Mary, there's an obvious situation, where the heck is Tanner Mangum? It is not a disrespect if you take Taysom out and have Tanner come in like a long field goal kicker. You know, the guy that can boot at 60, but you let the other guy kick the 35-yarder, right? Like, what, why, what is this, Taysom can't throw those type of passes.
But at the same time, you're going to have Tanner coming off the bench cold.
Yeah.
And try and throw a 30-yard pass.
Yeah. Yes, I am. Absolutely. Have him on the sideline, be warmed up for those type of situations. But, okay, fine. Fair enough. Maybe you're right there. I don't think you are, but maybe you're right. But, Matt, the other problem I have is, we have two great quarterbacks, one of whom's a running quarterback. We have never run a single play with both of them on the field. Why? We have these... Now if they do it in these next four games that we're going to win easily, but isn't there a trick play in there? Or two? Against some really good teams where you put them both on the field and all of a sudden now the defense is on their knees? Now you're not going to... On their heels? You're not going to do that a lot, but... Don't you at least try that two or three times to this point in the season?
I would, but you know, I'm a video game football coach, right? So you know, what do I really know? Am I surprised that Ty Detmer, as a quarterback, now coach, is maintaining consistency with one quarterback on the field and letting that guy be the guy and that guy get all the reps and not and being really sensitive to breaking up the rhythm there. No, not I'm not surprised by that at all.
Matt, this offense is bad. The passing offense is historically bad. Now they've played some very good defenses. They're not going to replace Taysom. He will start, and assuming health, he will play the 95% of the snaps between here and the bowl game, right?
Yeah, and Tanner will see no meaningful snaps.
He will see no meaningful
barring
snaps.
Barring an injury.
Barring an injury. He may get in. He certainly will play against SUU. He may play in all four of these last games because I don't think any of these teams are good. Well, Matt, let's go. Justin Sweeney asked that same question, why he hasn't been in a – go ahead.
Sweeney.
Why he hasn't been in a thing, so a single meaningful play so far, and we've covered that. So, Matt, James Lowe asked this. Considering the season so far, has the football team met, exceeded, or fallen short of preseason expectations? Matt?
You know, I can't remember. I'd have to think about it, and I'm sure you have written down somewhere kind of what I had predicted the record to be at this point in the season.
Yes.
But 4-4 feels about right.
So, I do have that. And we did get a couple of questions, people asking us to look at our preseason predictions. So, let's look here. 2016... So, Matt, you had at our preseason, we both had them to be 4-4 after the Boise game. So, yes, they have met preseason. What annoys me, though, Matt, is UCLA is not very good, and we lost to them.
Mm-hmm.
We beat a pretty good Toledo team. That win is looking better. Michigan State is not good. Right? And we have lost to Utah and West Virginia, who are very good teams as well. I feel like because of what we know now, this team should be 5-3.
Well, if you look at these losses, obviously, right? I mean, what's the total point difference? 8?
Yeah. It's crazy.
3-4.
So yeah, you feel 8. Like you should You should have
pulled one of those out. I think the Utah game was very winnable. The West Virginia game, the way that one played out, is a little bit different. But the Utah game, very winnable. UCLA game, I think, very winnable.
Boise State,
very winnable. Boise State, probably very winnable, right? So knowing what I know now, yeah, sure, maybe this team should be 5-3. But, you know, at the end of the day, like they didn't get it done.
No, they did not. They did not get it done. And that's the thing. In the end, you know, what's that quote? They are who we thought they were. Or the good old Bill Parcells is our record. That's how good we are. Right. So there's a lot, to that. Matt, is wide receiver the biggest problem outside of quarterback play on the offense?
On the offense. Maybe. I think pass protection has been an issue during certain parts of the season,
yep.
Which is another one I would point to. But the drops, there does seem to be an inordinate amount of dropped balls.
Yeah,
stuff going where that probably should be caught, bouncing off hands and those kinds of things.
Okay, so Matt, just a preview of our over unders, okay, and how we're looking at. We both picked Taysom Hill for over 3,100 yards passing. Not looking good there. He needs 1,500 yards in 4 games. I'm going to say at this point he does not hit 3,100.
Yeah, I'm going to take the under there if I can adjust my...
And we're going to do that right now.
All right, I'm going to take the under on the 3,100.
We're going to do a late season adjustment. But yes, I think we were both overly optimistic. Taysom Hill, 1,100 yards rushing. I did under, you did over. He, at this point, has 372 yards, Matt. He is not going to even get close to that.
Yeah, we're going to have to take the under.
He's not going to get close. Total TDs, 32. That's rushing and passing. He has 5 TDs rushing, 9 TDs passing. He's 14. He's got 4 games left, Matt. We both said over. I think he's going to be under.
Over what number?
32. So he's going to need a bunch.
Yeah, he's under.
Jamal Williams, 1,260 yards rushing. This one is complicated by the injury. He's obviously at 942. Assuming he's healthy for these last four games, it's a slam dunk, Matt. I'm going to still take the over on that one.
I'll take the over even if he sits another game. But we got the, you know, he sat last week. He's got the bye week.
Yeah, he'll be fine.
I think we see him on the
I think you're fine. Anyone on the team having more than 6.5 sacks right now? Where's my defensive statistics? Right now, the leader is Tautu with 5.5 sacks, Matt. I said under. You said under. I'm going
to
say over.
Yeah, I think you have Tautu to take gets that. At this point. Yeah.
I think Tautu gets any Cougar with 85 tackles or more. Butch Powell has 60, Matt, and missed two games. I'm taking the over. I'm taking the over on that one. Yeah, which you had the under. I had predicted, though, that it would be who did I say in that preview show? Do you remember?
I bet you said it was Longy.
I think I said it. No, it was a Longy because at defensive end, he wasn't going to lead the team. It was a linebacker.
Well, we knew at that point he was going to be. Oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
Warner, I think, is who I said.
Yeah, you're probably
6.1
right.
Yards offensive for offensive football, Matt, per play. They're not going to be anywhere close to that. I said under. You said over. I think we can boastfully say it's going to be under at this point.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's just where we're at.
On the defense, on the flip side of that is the defense. We had the over-under set at 4.6 yards, Matt. Now, this is going to get weird for them because right now they are at astronomically high, 6.12 yards per play, which would be the highest BYU has given up since the Gary Croton era. Now, they're going to pad their defensive numbers substantially in the next four games, but it won't get them to below 4.6. So we both said they would be over. We will both be correct. They will be over 4.6. Yep. So, Matt, that's kind of the update on, and we will revisit that at the end of the season for sure.
All right. For sure.
All right, Matt, it's time for the BYU men's basketball preview.
I do not have a homemade sound effect for that.
I'll do one right now. Are you ready? I'm going to make it up on the spot. Men's basketball preview! Should
if I had that? Like a basketball in here, I could bounce on my desk.
How's that? I'm bouncing my can. No?
All right. That doesn't sound like a basketball at all.
It sounds like a can. Did you just bounce a basketball?
Is that what that sounded like?
Yeah, kind of. What was that?
Is that a basketball? Is that what that sounds like?
Kind of. What is it?
There we go. It's my new sound effect, baby.
It's magic. It's magic. Woo! All right.
It's like the 1950s radio show.
Take that, Kathleen. Like
shaking bean bags and rubbing quarters on washboards.
That's right. That's right. All right. So, Matt, we have some returners that we're going to talk about, and we're going to talk about the newbies, okay? We're not going to talk about everybody on the roster. I'm just going to talk about the people that I think are going to make significant impact on the season. Okay? Fair enough?
That's fair enough, I guess, you know?
All right.
You can't get them all. So,
Nick Emery, Matt, we're going to play it this way, okay? You're going to tell me better than last year, same as last year, worse than last year, as far as numbers and total contribution goes, okay? Nick Emery, better, same, or worse? We'll get to some over-unders here in a minute.
Okay, but you're just talking overall?
Yeah, overall performance.
Oh, better.
Better. Eric Mika, better, same, or worse than his freshman year before the mission?
Better.
I'm going to say same. I'm going to say same. And it was a high level, right? So that's nothing bad. Corbin Kaufusi, I'm going to say worse.
It didn't have to be worse, right?
Well, he's certainly not going to play as many games.
But he is going to play.
He's listed as playing. I assume he will play some. I think by the time he gets in there with the deeper set of big men that they have, I don't know that he plays very much. But on the other hand, he is a guy that can play defense still. at least on the basketball field. Oh!
Heyo!
Has he been a disappointment on the football field? He has to me.
He blocked a field goal.
Now, that was awesome. And he should have more of those over his career. But yes, he did block a field goal. Jamal Ates, I'm going to say better.
Oh, yeah, that one will be better.
Yeah, he'll get better. Kyle Davis, I'm going to say the same.
You know what? I've said better on every one of these, but I'm going with the same on Kyle Davis.
Yeah, yeah. I think he will be solid, and he'll give good minutes and good leadership and all that stuff. So newcomers, Matt, obviously we can't do better or worse or the same, so we're going to change it up a little bit. I'm going to give you impact player, role player, or bench player. Okay? Are you ready?
All right.
Elijah Bryant.
Bench.
You're serious? Impact. Bryant's an impact.
All right, we'll see.
We'll see. LJ Rose. Bench.
Yeah, you're right, bench.
Yoli Childs. Contributor.
Yeah, I can go contributor on Childs.
Peyton Dastrup.
I'm going to say contributor.
I'm going to say contributor. TJ Haws.
What are my three options again?
You have impact player, contributor, or bench.
Oh, he's an impact player.
I think he's just going to be a contributor this year. I think he will eventually be an impact player, but we'll see. It's that.
I think he comes
lineup,
not right away, but I think by the end of the season, I think he's playing a real meaningful role.
That may be true. That may be true, man. I would, you know, obviously these Lone Peak guys, you know, we'll see. Haws is, as Jerem said earlier on the program, is a little small right now, a little thin. He's got some bulking up to do. But like you said, you know, we saw this with Emery. He turned a corner at some point around midseason and became a different player than he had been earlier in the year, right? We may see something similar out of TJ Haws. So let's do a little over-under, Matt. Last year, Nick Emery, averaged 16.3 points per game. Matt, over-under, 19.5 points per game for Nick Emery.
Under.
I'm going to go over.
Which is interesting because I said better and you said the same.
On Emery?
Yeah, what did you say on Emery? You said better?
Yeah, I said better.
Oh, okay.
We both said better on Emery. Okay. I'll rewind it and look at it later. No, I won't.
Nope. Somebody will call us out on it, I'm sure.
Elijah Bryant, rebounds per game, 6.5.
I'm going with under.
I'm going to go over on that one. Eric Mika, over, under, and I'm going to give this one is going to be a double one, Matt, both points and rebounds, okay? So he has to be over both or under both, or you can say a push, meaning, is that how you do it? No, that's not how you do it.
If it's over, so, but I can say over both, under both, but if I think he's going to be over one and under the other, I'll just call that even.
Yeah, call that even. Call that even. Sure. 11 points and 8.5 rebounds.
Oh, you're killing me.
Yeah, that one's tough. I'm going to say he's over on points and under on rebounds.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say he's over on both.
Okay, good for
I mean,
you.
What, he had 11.8 points as a freshman, 6.5 rebounds.
Yes.
You know, I think the rebounding game gets a little bit better. And I think he can at least, I think he can turn up the point total just a little bit. I'm going to go ahead and take the over on both.
All right. TJ,
I'm all in.
TJ Haws, over under 8.5 points a game.
Oh, that's tough because I think he turns on, but late in the season.
And even when he turns on, he's not going to be dropping 30s, right?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and just say under.
I'm going to say under, but it, like you said, if he really turns it on in the season, we may say, yeah, but in conference play, he averaged 9. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It could be a different deal. So Matt, looking at this schedule, as we look at the BYU basketball schedule, there are a few games that stick out in the non-conference schedule, okay? Open up with Princeton. That's a big game, probably a top 70 team. And on national TV, so that's great. There is a game against USC in Los Angeles. They were a top 50 team last year. Colorado is probably a top 50 or at least a top 70 team. So those are your big non-conference games. There is a possibility to play. I think it's Valpo or Alabama, right?
Mm-hmm.
Depending on who gets where in that little early season tournament. After that, Matt, it's similar to the last few years. After that, it comes down to four games against St. Mary's and Gonzaga.
Well, there you go. At least we know what we need to do.
So Matt, looking at that schedule, non-conference, before we get to the conference, basically, to me, the only acceptable loss is USC.
What about Illinois?
Illinois wasn't great last year. Honestly, I haven't dug into where Illinois is expected to be. But Illinois might be. It's technically neutral, but it's in Chicago. So
yeah, it's in Chicago, Illinois.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the University of Illinois is not in Chicago, but yes.
It's a lot closer to Chicago than Provo is.
Yes, it most certainly is. Illinois might be the other one. So those two games, I think you'd got to beat Princeton and Provo.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the Coppin States and the Coastal Carolinas and those teams.
You got to win those.
You got to beat Utah Valley and Utah State. Neither of them were great last year. Utah State was decent. You got to beat Weber. Colorado's at home. I think you got to have that one too. So going in there, I think you've got to go into the conference for your tournament chances to be good with just one or two losses. Am I being too harsh on that early season schedule?
No, I think you're right. I mean, these are mostly games that you really ought to win.
Yeah, I think they are games that you should win. Like last year, this isn't the out of conference schedule is not fantastic. It's not terrible, but it's not quite fantastic. So let's get into the conference schedule, Matt. Basically, you can't lose more than four.
Right.
I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah, we know they're going to drop one or two games. They shouldn't, but you've then got to split with St. Mary's and Gonzaga to have a chance at the dancing on in March. Am I being too harsh on that?
No, I think that's kind of standard fare at this point, right?
Because if they lose six games, say two and then four, if they lose six games or seven games, they end up with 24-25 wins. So that'd be more than they had last year going into the tournament. I think if you lose one or two more than that, you will be like last year. You'll be sitting on the outside and need substantial help to get in.
Yes.
Based on this schedule, because the conference schedule is probably going to be terrible outside of those four games.
Yeah, and so you're talking about a six loss season? Yeah, I mean,
a six loss season.
You're not going to have the wins. You're not going to have the wins on the resume to balance that out, because the losses are going to be these teams that we're talking about where you have a chance to make a statement.
Yes.
And if in all of those games you fold, you've got nothing. You have no case. Yeah.
No, if you six loss, I think you're in because you win 25 games. Depending on, you need one or two of those to be quality. It depends.
Well, right. If those six losses are, twice to St. Mary's, twice to Gonzaga,
it's tough because then what's your signature win?
Right, and your signature win happened in December. Whatever.
Yeah. Your signature win or November against Princeton.
Yeah, so that's,
right.
I think so six wins. I don't know that, but I hear what you're saying. I mean, with six losses probably doesn't automatically remove you, but it really does depend what those losses are.
Yeah,
and when
absolutely, happen. Absolutely. So this will be a big early start, Matt. So let's finish the preview with this. And I talked with Jerem early on in the podcast about it, but I'd love to hear your expectation as well. So we talked about meeting expectations for the football team. What are the expectations you have of this team? Is it NCAA tournament or bust? Is it a failure if this young team doesn't make the NCAA tournament?
I think when you think about the long-term prospects of what we think this team is capable of now that we've got all these guys together and you look at the window that we're really going to have that core nucleus, right? Because they're not all the same year in school and all this.
Right.
So you look at that window, you look at the expectations. I think as a fan base, we're expecting this team to make the tournament. You look at this schedule and you say to yourself, all right, these guys ought to be competitive in conference. They're not going to lose twice to St. Mary's and twice to Gonzaga. I don't anticipate that happening. Which means and I think they'll do really well in their non-conference schedule. They may drop a game or two, but at that point you're talking about four or five losses maybe. And with the four or five losses, if you beat Gonzaga, and especially if you can beat Gonzaga on the road at the end or make a decent showing in the conference tournament, you're playing. You're going to the dance, right?
Yeah.
So I think given the combination of talent, the expectations here, and the schedule that they're working with, I think they've got a pretty good shot. And I certainly think that the BYU fan faithful expects them to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the standing expectation with the Dave Rose team, right? Is make the tourney. The standing expectation. So Matt, Gonzaga's going to reload. I think St. Mary's is going to be good again. Percent chance they can win the conference tournament?
That just, it seems to be an impossible task, right? I mean,
15%? 10% less?
That they win the conference tourney? I'd say it's no greater than 10%. I think that if you're just dividing the percentage up here, right? Gonzaga and St. Mary's both are taking the lion's share of the chance.
It's got to be like 65 or 70 for Gonzaga, right?
Yeah. And then, what's left over? I think it still comes down to those same three teams.
Oh, yeah. It's 95% chance one of those three teams wins it, right?
Yeah. Maybe higher. You know, and I don't see anybody here who I really feel like is going to be a sleeper.
No.
Or compete. You know, sometimes one or two of these teams will pop up like that. I don't see anybody doing that this year. But I'm not sitting here scouring, you know, Pepperdine's roster and schedule and everything either. But neither is anybody else, and there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
So I think it does come down to these three teams, but St. Mary's and Gonzaga are a little bit ahead of the curve on BYU right now.
So Matt, over under basketball wins 23.5.
23.5. I'm gonna go ahead. Oh man, that's tight.
That is tight.
I'm going to go under,
but just barely. I think we get 23.
Yeah, 23 is the number I had.
Which, again, like you said before, it depends on who those eight losses are to, right? And it depends on, you know, I'm looking at last year's rankings, and obviously in college sports, that's a fool's errand when predicting the next year, right? Because you got lots of turnover, coaching changes, all sorts of other things that can make one team look great one year and bad the next, or vice versa. But certainly based on the schedule we got here, as we see it today, they got to get a couple of those big wins against Gonzaga and St. Mary's. So Matt, that is our men's basketball preview. We will of course now be incorporating and talking men's basketball pretty much every week. So
it's crazy that it's this time of year already. And you know what I love about this? Is I can see almost every single one of these games on my television.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
A couple of these I might have to, you know, I'm sure there'll be a streaming option for some of these Spectrum. There may be a streaming option for some of the, I don't know about the Route Northwest. But, you know, so a couple of these games I might be able to miss, but I can get all of these games on my TV, and that is
amazing.
The
preseason games.
Yeah.
You know, and it's fantastic. I'm very excited about that. I'm very excited about this portion of independence, in this case being with the WCC, enables this as opposed to our prior arrangement, which did not enable us to see. And it just means I get into it more, right?
More involved,
more invested.
It makes it a lot more fun. You can get more invested. And even when the team's not great, you still have an opportunity to watch all the games, right? And I know that, you know, as much as this year, you know, people, if you look on Twitter and stuff, it's tough when your football team's 4-4, or, you know, if this basketball team, you know, loses a couple early and people kind of get down on them. But I'd like to try and continually remind myself of the early years of the MTN network.
Yes, yes.
You know, I remember trying to get, I believe it was a Florida State game, Yes. And it was a Saturday, and I was driving around to sports bars all over Fairfax County trying to find a place to broadcast this game.
Yeah, good luck with
and,
that.
And, you know, nobody had it. You know, and at one point, I was going from place to place following – I was caravanning with a guy who was a Florida State fan. And he's like, well, it's you guys' network. Where, you know, what is this? Where is it? I said, dude, I know less about it than you do. I remember he told me, he's like, well, I did this internet research. I think this bar has it or this bar has it. I said, well, you know more about this stupid network than I do. I'll follow you.
Did you ever find it?
I don't know that we did.
Yeah, that was depressing.
And so we've come a long way since those days, and our opportunity to get into the sports. I mean, think about the volleyball games that you watch now that you never would have been able to
see before. Soccer. I mean, you know, yeah. And,
yeah, cool. So the advent of BYU TV into this, the independent football scheduling, the cooperation with the WCC and BYU TV to get these games on the air. You know, even every once in a while, I'll sit down and watch a game on BYU TV that's not one of ours.
Yeah. Yeah, I have too. It's pretty cool. Well, Matt, next week we'll be back talking some more hoops, I'm sure. We'll also be previewing the Cincinnati Bearcats. And that brings us to our last tweet bag question of the day.
Oh, yeah. So where does a bearcat come from?
Yeah, it's when a bear and a cat mated. Right? Right?
Isn't that where it comes from?
So if you have made it this far into the podcast and you're now past an hour.
You just said made it. You just said made it.
I said mated. Mated. Mated, I said. M-A-T-E-D. If you've made it this far.
Love each other very much.
If you've made it this far, the hashtag this week for making it to the end of the podcast is hashtag BearCatPick. BearCatPick, as in P-I-C, picture. And that's because of Todd's question at Todd Andy on Twitter. Matt, he asks, how's that BearCat picture coming along?
Yeah, I'd forgotten about this. Are we doing this?
Hashtag bi-week activity. Here's the problem, Matt. I totally forgot.
What is the zoo closed or something?
No, the zoo's not closed, but I have a day job. Like, I've got this Saturday to go get a picture of me in front of a stupid, what are they really called?
The binturong.
Binturong. I've got to figure this out. Photoshop may end up being
Cincinnati
involved.
Fighting binturongs.
Yes, they should be the binturongs. No, that's much cooler.
You can't, you cannot Photoshop this.
I didn't say that.
That is so lame. I think this would even call. I think this would qualify as an ox in the mire if you needed to do it on a different day over the weekend. You'd have my support. You'd have my support on that.
I would say it's a binturong in the mire, right?
Hey-o.
Hey.
Hey. Hey, how'd that binturong get in the mire?
I told this to my wife today, and she just shook her head. She's like, "You're ridiculous."
Is that even is? It is binturong, isn't it? I want to call it the binturongarong.
The binturong.
Oh, yeah, binturong.
Binturong. Yeah, that's what it is. So anyway, tune in next time. We would, of course, encourage you to check us out on Twitter. That's at BYU_RiceShout on Twitter. Join the conversation on Facebook. We get more and more fans every week joining us there. That's facebook.com/RiceAndShout. You can email the podcast if you prefer the snail mail version. And I'm sorry, we didn't get to everybody's questions this week. We did run out of time, but please send those in every week. We love it. The email is riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. One word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Matt, any parting words?
I was glad to see Sweeney get back into the Twitter bag. I think it feels like it had been a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was a couple of weeks ago. He missed a week or something. Yeah, but yeah, anyway, yeah. Good to hear from you, Sweeney.
Good to have you back, buddy. Well, thank you, everybody, for downloading and listening. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars. Beat the Binturongs.
What happened? How do you get a Bearcat? Stop giggling. I'm trying to end the podcast.
You just asked a ridiculous question.